In the now.
Everyone, welcome to the April 4th edition of the In the Now Show. Your host, Slip Mode, along with Esteem Sidekick.
VR
in the house, as usual, on time, and dependable, as ever.
I'm like a Rolex.
In what way?
That I'm dependable, and I'm not cheap.
All right.
And I always have some kind of style.
Sweet. All right, well, we have a lot of good information, stories. I've been really excited about the news the last few weeks. Things have been really interesting. Things have been going on. And Sever Dreams would like to make it to the show, but he is actually not in town. So we're going to see what we can do to get him on the next show. Glad to have him here. Interesting points of view and conversation and dialogue going on. All right, well, moving right along, Congress moves to criminalize peer-to-peer.
Wow. So actually, like, dialogue can become illegal.
Yes. Well, what do you mean by dialogue exactly?
Well, because, you know, peer-to-peer is actually kind of like conversation because it's me, peer, you, peer, and we're talking.
Yeah. So, I think it's the content, though, is what they're trying to say. Well, let me get into it. This actually has to do with the Pirate Act that Congress is working on out there. That passed, actually. I should have read up on that. I don't know if it passed or it is in the middle of trying to be passed. Okay. Sorry for my bad neglect of not knowing that piece of information. All right. Well, Congress appears to be preparing assaults against peer-to-peer technology on multiple fronts. Bill drafted recently, circulated amongst members of the House Judiciary Committee, would make it much easier for the Justice Department to pursue criminal prosecutions against file sharers for lowering the burden of proof. The bill obtained Thursday by Wired News, which is back in mid-March, also would seek penalties of fines and prison time for up to 10 years for file sharing.
Oh, God.
Yes.
You know, talk about like overkill on the punishment there.
In addition, on Thursday, Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, and Patrick Leahy, which is Democrat from Vermont, introduced a bill that would allow the Justice Department to pursue civil cases against file sharers, again, making it easier for law enforcement to punish people trading copyright music over peer-to-peer networks.
So it makes it easier for them to punish them or to actually catch them?
Both. Well, if you catch them, you can punish them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but at the same time, is it really that difficult
to
catch somebody who's doing, you know, file swapping copyrighted data over a peer-to-peer network?
I'm thinking it's getting a little bit easier.
Yeah, so do we really need to make it easier and give up even more rights? And yeah.
Well, here, Let me finish this off. They dubbed the bill the Protection Intellectual Rights Against Theft and Exploitation Act of 2004, which spells out pirate.
Ooh, somebody really thought about that really hard.
Yeah, yeah. That's why they get the big bucks. The bill comes out at a time when music and movie industries are exerting enormous pressure on all branches of the government at federal levels, at the federal levels and state levels to crack down on peer-to-peer content privacy, piracy. The industries also are pushing to portray peer-to-peer networks as dens of terrorists, child pornographers, and criminals. Man, I really felt like I was, you know, being a terrorist when I downloaded pirated software back in the day because I didn't want to pay $500 when I was in high school to learn how to use Photoshop. Okay.
That makes you a terrorist.
And a child pornographer, no doubt.
Yeah.
A strategy that would make it more palatable for politicians to pass laws against products that are very popular with their constituents. In defending the Pirate Act, Hatch said the operators of peer-to-peer networks are running a conspiracy in which they lure children and young people with free music, movies, and pornography. With these human shields, the peer-to-peer companies are trying to ransom the entertainment industries into accepting their networks as a distribution channel and source of revenue. That's a little... That's a lot biased.
That's way over the top. That sounds like, Bush Jr.'s, you know, that sounds like him trying to justify everything he's ever done.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, you know, in all honesty, I'm not a big file swapper guy. Not saying that, like, not a big guy into the idea of it. What I mean is I really don't do much file swapping. Just because I just don't. I don't think there's any particular reason why. But when I have done it, I don't really think I was hurting someone. Maybe there's people out there, I know there are people out there that just have tons and tons of stuff and they're not giving anything to their original creators, but you know, that's an extreme, but, hey, you know, it's all about anyways, all this new technology that's coming out. Basically it's getting all this media content and crap or whatever at your fingertips.
Yeah.
And they just want to make it so they can control it. It's pretty much why
they're pushing. Just trying to make sure that they're getting their return on their, you know, research and development dollars.
Yeah. Or ultimate return, you know what I mean?
Like, oh yeah. It's not just to break even or to, you know, push for a little further. They've got to build up a huge cash flow once again.
They're like, hey,
to justify
two houses.
Doing even more research and development. Because whenever you do research and development, you know, maybe one thing pans out of 100. So I can kind of see that they're really wanting to crack down on it. But there are ways in order to reward people for, you know, paying them.
Yeah. You know, it's always a hard thing to figure out what's the best balance. I think the best balance is people are able to get it done a little bit, you know, do some file sharing without having all this crap watching them and having legitimate networks as well. You know what I mean? And where that balance is very hard to determine, but I don't know. You can't just have the establishment always running everything.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, like having like a better or a little bit more time on a trial version would probably cut down on quite a bit of it. Because most people are downloading most of these programs to use it to do one specific thing that they're not wanting to pay the $500 for it. You just give them a little extra time. They get it done. Everybody's happy. And if they do want to use it in the future, then they can justify buying it.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, every time there's something good that comes out, like, that or has potential for good, some things are really good, some things have the ability to be good and be abused. Like, open source is good. I don't see any abuse there. Peer-to-peer networks are good. There's, you know, possible areas of abuse. But every time something comes out, you'll see that what they want to do is the establishment wants to come in and get a hold on it. You know, the Internet was a good place, and now they're trying to get a hold on it and turn it into crap. And, you know, it just always happens, and then something new comes out, and society changes, and there's always new things at all times. But I think we've been enjoying things for, like, the last... 15 years with technology that have really pulled off a lot of great things, and now that things are getting towards their peak and highest use and stuff like that, people are digging in and trying to change and modify,
They're trying to maximize their benefit out of it.
Yeah.
Get their dollar out. When if they just let it go a little bit more, it's just going to become bigger and better. And
yeah, you know, it's. I think it could be potentially a lot better. I mean, I think people are going to have to probably. I think music's gotten a little bit better lately.
Well, yeah, because they're going to have to be better to, in order for people to justify paying the $15, $20 for the CD.
Yeah, because now, actually, I'm on iTunes, and I go and just buy the song I like.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
99 cents, I grab it, you know, and I can preview the songs.
Well, see, like, there's a couple of artists, which I forget their names now, which are doing a really neat thing. If you buy their CD, you can go to their website and get even more tracks that they didn't put on the CD. And other things that they have.
Whoa, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, so it's like if you really like this group or you want, or you're curious on what these things are, yeah, you might. It'd be more likely that you'll buy the CD than you'll just download it.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. That's an interesting way of looking at it. It's like,
So yeah, you get the base product, the base thing. Like you could go and download it, but if you want to buy it, well, you get something special out of it.
I think that actually puts a little bit more respect for the artists. You know what I mean? Like you're giving them that respect. Like, hey, if I like it, I can get more of their stuff.
Right.
You know, I know that the people are like, well, what if it really sucks and I don't care about the other stuff?
Well, then you don't do it again.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. That's pretty cool.
So they've got to put, like good stuff on their. So in the future, they're going to have like their really good stuff. I would do on the website.
Do you know of that artist or?
You know what? I know Evanescence does it. There was another. I just heard another one on the radio that did it again. I can't remember. It was kind of some hair band that was. They were all their stuff sounded exactly alike. So I was like, well, that's a really neat way to get people to buy their CD because they all every song that I heard sounded like exactly like except for some of the lyrics. So it's like. So I wouldn't go out and buy their CD, but if,
How about this? You can preview the CD like everyone can now, hopefully. Like I can do with iTunes, I think. You can preview the CD. If you buy it, instead of just buying the individual tracks, you know, let's just say there's a few succulents there. Maybe that's another way of enticing them to buy the whole CD because if we buy the whole CD, we'll give you more, you know? Like,
right.
So.
And so they get a little bit more out of it, and you get a little bit more out of it, and everybody's happy. They just have to work a little bit more, but that's, the end result of technology.
Yeah. You know, music nowadays actually is just flourishing all over.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
And it's all starting, a lot of it sounds exactly the same from one artist to another, like most of the popular stuff. And then there's all kinds of really neat stuff that's going on.
See, that's why I'm very much happy with buying the song I like from various artists. Like, actually, I heard a song that was on, was it The Verve, Bittersweet Symphony or whatever it was. I heard that at the end of a movie, and I was like, oh, sweet. You know, I like that song. I figured out what it was for the credits. I went and bought it, and I heard some old music playing on a talk radio show. Like, it was their opening, whatever. I was like, hey, what's that song? And I asked somebody, and I, kind of sang a little bit. And I found out what it was, and I grabbed it. And I'm like, I'm really happy with just picking the best out of.
Well, that's the beauty of technology. That
you're
creating your own little hegemony of music.
Yeah, and it's if you grab a few songs off peer to peer and you're not paying for it, big whoop. You're not a terrorist and you're not a child pornographer. I know what they mean by child pornographer. People passing that kind of crap down the line, but it depends on what network you're on and usually. From my experience of seeing what's on peer-to-peer networks, or back in the day when you used to grab it from hidden private rooms on AOL through email and all this stuff.
Yeah, there's going to be.
They didn't have a lot of that. There's lots of other stuff. You know what I mean? And
well, that's the thing is, if they regulate the peer-to-peer networks, there's just going to be another way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So
you can jump on a server that's out of the country, which has no. no U.S. regulations on it. And wow, what do you know? You're still doing the same thing, and no one's getting any benefit out of it but you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's do it so everybody gets some benefit out of it.
Yeah. Why not just bust the child pornographers instead of the... Well, you know, if they use peer-to-peer technology and they find out who they are, who's passing it, you know, I'm for all busting those types of people. Yeah. Grabbing, you know, a little bit of music here, maybe some software that you want to play with, you know. Maybe you don't even have enough money for the educational version. I think some of these fines and sentences are way too steep. And I don't know if they're actually going for those people. I know that we did say they went after a 15-year-old girl. I don't know how much that she downloaded. But, you know,
well, so the,
if they're going for, like, people that have, like, 40 gigs of stuff that they downloaded, maybe, you know, go for those guys. But I just hope it doesn't get to the point to where anybody can just easily get snapped.
Well, what kind of activity, if you're a terrorist, what kind of stuff would you be doing with other terrorists on a peer-to-peer network that you couldn't do on, like, email or some kind of instant messenger or,
yeah,
you know, some other kind of shared format?
Yeah.
If they're catching terrorists in that format, they're the stupid ones, and they're going to catch them doing something else anyway.
Yeah, and putting terrorism on this crap, where is this at again?
It's just a way to get people to, you know, anger. Anger and accusation is one of the easiest ways to get people involved with your cause.
Okay, they didn't say specifically that peer-to-peer are... Well, the article, the person who wrote the article says the industries are also portraying the peer-to-peer networks as dens of terrorists. Yeah, it's just...
Well, if they're portraying it, they're saying it.
Pretty much.
It's, and you know, the human shields. They mentioned it. Or, yeah, and human shields. Yeah, well, yeah. That's just the rhetoric of war, which we have way too much of already.
Yeah, and also, because we're on our bittersweet rant here, that the fact that, like, you know, that they portray, that they think the society is that stupid, you know, that they could, not with this, the peer-to-peer thing, that they keep attaching terrorism to all this stuff, you know. Before, you know, people just did things wrong, you know. Now they're just, everyone's a freaking terrorist, you know, if they do something, you know. And it's just ridiculous. It's just, you know, it depends on who you talk to who say that that's terrorist, or, you know, not everyone's saying that, but just to hear it is just...
Well, it's a really easy way to not get people to question what you're doing or your methods of it, because if you're questioning me trying to prevent terrorism, well, you must be a terrorist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
That's why, you know, terrorism is so... The word is so prolific in the rhetoric of politics now, because you don't question it.
Yeah.
Because it becomes a Salem witch hunt. It's like, oh, you must be harboring witches. You must be one of them, and, well, we're going to hang you.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, so they get more, even more unquestionable power.
All right. Well, moving on, we have... some new possible domain names that might be put out there. And one of them is, now, believe it or not, if we discussed this before, one of them is, well, I'll read them all, top to bottom, .asia.
Right on.
Which is kind of weird because JP is for Japan, China's CN.
Well, they only have like 2 billion people there.
Yeah, they need their own. .cat. Don't know what that's for.
That's for all the cat-loving people.
Yeah. .jobs. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, that's good.
.mail.
Well, you know, it probably would take a lot of traffic off of...
Oh, the .mail domain. I think that may have to do with the new security thing that...
Yeah,
proposal .mail has been put forward by anti-spam workers... want to use it for storing information about legitimate email servers. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So there's a good little action towards the war on spam.
Yeah.
They should just make them all terrorists and take care of them.
Yes. And as I yeah. And then .mobi, not Mobi the guy that makes techno, but Mobi, MOBI for mobile phones. And as I was discussing here with VR. Earlier, maybe it'll get to the point where we'll be able to stream from your phone, websites.
That'd be great. Then I could have VR's pocket cam.
Yeah, and we wouldn't want to watch that.
See how VR's change is interacting in his pocket today.
Yeah.
The quarter is definitely dominating the pocket area today. And
yeah.
The penny is sitting there, Hutterford, in the corner in fear and shame.
But, maybe I was thinking that, maybe you'll be able to stream video from your phone. Hey, check me out on the web. That's maybe pretty neat. Might be pretty good for spring break, huh?
Oh, I see endless possibilities for spring break.
And probably lots of abuses, areas of abuse.
Oh, yeah. So they could actually be terrorists.
Oh, yeah. Let's see.
Or child pornographers on accident.
Oh, man.
See, it gets really scary when you really start.
Everyone's got a camera everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, cop pulls me over. Break it out right there.
Got the camera.
That's great, Vic, sir. We're recording, streaming live.
No Rodney King action here.
Yeah. Oh, we do have, officer, we do have 10 people watching the phone right now, if you want to see the hit list. Okay.
You better be on your best behavior, officer, sir.
Yeah, because you're working for me. No, okay. We're a little excited tonight. Let's see, dot post? Not sure. Down before, dot tell?
Dot post. Well, that could be like for bulletin boards.
Yeah,
or
I was thinking it might
like
be
that.
For bulletin boards, but, well, I don't know. See, what I think is if there's just too many, it's just not going to be cool.
Well, it's going to be, really
convoluted.
Well, it's going to be tough to, find anything of, somebody tells you about this one cool site, and then you're
I don't remember if it was dot com or dot post.
Or org or net or whatever. I'm got to, search five times to find it.
Yeah, what
it
is.
By the fourth time, I'm going to give up.
You know what it is? You know what it probably is for? Those companies that want to own, let's say it's slip.com, but I want to own slip.asia.cat.jobs.mail.mobi.net.org. Everything I can, because then you're paying more subscription. You're owning more names.
Oh, yeah.
The only
people that really benefit from that are the
register people.
So it's just trying to prey upon the mindlessness of the corporate conglomerates.
Yeah.
That don't know what's going on. They just throw money at things.
Dot tell. Dot travel.
Oh, like tell, like in hotel?
Just T-E-L.
Huh. Oh, that's for the diary things.
Diary things?
Yeah, you've seen people have diaries online. You can go and read them.
Oh, no, it's T-E-L.
Well, like tell.
I don't know. Telephones?
Well, that's what Mobi is.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm just throwing out ideas, too.
Yeah, dot travel. And the one that we've discussed here, except we didn't use this one, we came up with dot sex to move all the porn people over to.
Well, I thought we talked about triple X.
Maybe we did.
I'm pretty sure we did.
Either way, we had the idea of, here's the XXX proposal may not survive the scrutiny period because it's been suggested and rejected several times before now. But
this is actually the absolute stupidity of our legislative system. Then they're wanting to go after all these child pornographers. Well, why not? Yeah, I'm sure we talked about creating a whole domain exclusively for porn.
Yeah, the only problem is if you're a pornographer, and I'm sure Severed Dreams might have something to say on this, is that if you're limited to that, they may impose a lot of bad crap on you. The only reason I came up with the idea is because if you just wanted to make it safer for children in your household, it'd be easier to set up an internet filter program that would just filter that out.
Yeah, you can't do anything triple X. Well, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. You can still read CNN if it says the word sex on the webpage, because it's not as bad as that. It's saying, news.
So there's no accidental,
filtering of
it's
legitimate.
It's this, if you type in the dot triple X, you're wanting to look at porn.
Yeah. And I do think, I don't know. I don't want to say what should and what shouldn't be as far as sex on there. Obviously, anything under 18 would be very, very bad. So, the only thing I think is if they did do that, if they had some sort of way of registering it and someone would monitor the content to see if there were, models were not under 18. That's the only type of thing I would agree with. Anything other than that.
Well, see, that's what's really difficult with, you know, with the hairstyles of today. That's one of the big ways that they try to determine how old, you know, the model is.
Yeah, I can't determine it nowadays myself, actually.
Right, is with today's nutrition, it's almost impossible to tell on, like, you know, bone development or fat placement. It's that they kind of have to go by, is there hair or is there not hair?
Or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, or, you know, could it be higher? Could it be low? You know, where was it shaved? It's almost, it's like,
oh my goodness.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, yeah. All right. yeah, so that's our thoughts on the new debates that will possibly be out there, not for sure. Okay, well, this guy got accused of threatening Google and had some trouble there. Relying on secretly recorded meetings at a Mountain View-based Google, federal agents this week arrested, which is back in late March, a Ventura County man for allegedly threatening to release a software program to spammers that he claimed could cost the internet search engine company millions of dollars through bogus advertising clicks. Michael Anthony Bradley, 32, well, they might as well put his social, they got his middle name and everything, appeared Friday in a federal court in San Jose on charges of fraud and making illegal threats against Google in an alleged attempt to extort $100,000 from the company. A magistrate judge released Bradley on $50,000 bond on the condition that he not use a computer and avoid any contact with Google. Bradley's public defender could not be reached for comment. The telephone message of Bradley's Oak Park home also has not returned anything. In court papers unsealed Friday, law enforcement officials detailed Bradley's alleged efforts to threaten Google with a software program that he devised that creates phony clicks on pop-up advertisements delivered by Google. Google pays website publishers, companies, a certain amount for legitimate hits on those ads. But Bradley created a method that generates false clicks that appeared to be real internet traffic, which would have repeatedly defrauded Google.
Okay.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe...
Which is actually a really interesting thing now. It's like, he didn't try to extort Google from it and just released it. It would probably do away with most pop-up ads very quickly.
Well, it would also show the abuse of abusing the abusers, which would be interesting.
Yeah. Now, does that make that right? Or is that just kind of gray?
It's kind of gray.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fight for the people kind of thing.
Yeah, which is kind of good most of the time.
But it's definitely frowned upon by typical people in power.
Right, when you can just get a spam blocker and do the same thing.
Yeah. Don't know.
But then you don't need to have this extra level of protection because it would just stop using pop-ups.
Yeah. You know, if the guy developed the software, aren't they going to prosecute his butt anyways? I mean, sure, here's $100,000. We really trust you to not use it or show anybody. You know what I mean? Give me a break, you know?
Yeah, well, just because that's how extortion works. Is
yeah.
If you can do it once, you'll do it again, and you might give it to your friends to extort them too.
Or just, yeah, tell somebody over in another country or whatever, someplace different, and tell them how you made it, but then they can make it on their own, and they can have a different version. It works a little different. You know, saying, I discovered it on my own. But, yeah, I don't know.
And then kick him 10%.
Yeah, you know, that's, I don't know. We want to do, you know, freedom to people stuff, but obviously there's just some dumb things out there. Okay, the recording industry sued 532 people Tuesday, which is back in late March, including scores of individuals using computer networks at 21 universities, claiming that they were illegally sharing digital music files over the internet. The RIAA filed the John Doe complaints, which means they don't actually know who the people are. They just have the recorded IP addresses against 89 individuals using networks at universities in Arizona, California, New York, India, Maryland, Colorado, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Wisconsin, and Washington. Lawsuits were filed against 443 people using a commercial internet access providers in California, Colorado, Missouri, Texas, and Virginia. So, still busting people out there with the John Doe complaints of tracking IPs. There's a lot of people that do stuff at universities because they have the bandwidth. You know, they'll get access to a server and stick it up there. Okay, now, this has been some interesting information that I've seen on the news. It's been talked about by a lot of people, but I wanted to bring it up here. Earth might not be the only planet in our solar system to have hosted salty seas. NASA's Opportunity has uncovered evidence that the rocks near its landing site on Mars not only were once wet, but they were formed at the bottom of a body of a gently flowing salt water. We think Opportunity is now parked on what was once the shoreline of a salty sea on Mars.
Wow.
Yeah, because they've taken, they had one where he pulled up kind of to a large rock or side of a rock, and just kind of like how you look at the sediment and the layers of how the land was created, not a rock, but land, how it was created, and they were saying that, you know, that, you know, what they were picking up from their, you know, equipment, the rocks are being analyzed and stuff like that, that it was definitely water. And they specifically landed Opportunity in this one area because it's kind of like a valley.
Yeah.
And they specifically put them in there because they thought that that was one of their best bets for, you know, finding this information.
Well, because it's like the striations in rock tell you a lot about the geological activity there. Because if they're, you know, how... You know, just by having striations, that there's actually been change, which means that there's been other influences rather than gravity and atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah. They said it was actually, when I watched this one special on the Opportunity, they had said it was actually a tough place for them to land, but they figured if they're going to do this, you know, it'd be a great place to land, so that's where they did it.
Because I've seen where it looks like there's actually been... like microbic activity in the rocks, that there's actually the same kind of stuff that they found in the meteorite that they found in Antarctica that they thought was actually a piece of Mars as well. It looked almost identical. But I think that they found out it was like, you know, just a process of water and sulfuric acid.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if it's just people don't want to say a specific discovery or something like that, but I've heard it constantly saying, like, over the last, I don't know, 5 years, where they say, like, we know that there's water on Mars. And then they're like, well, we found something that may prove there's water on Mars. What if they said before they know there's water on Mars, and now they're saying they found something that may prove there's something water on Mars, you know, it just throws me off. And they've been doing it for the last few years, you know?
Well, why they can say that is because there's ice on Mars.
Yeah, the white polar cap.
Yeah, and so... technically, ice is water. So there is water. It's just, you know, and that there is, if you look at it, there's a distinct difference between erosion of Earth that has been done by water or by air. And you can look at it and see that, well, that's got to be, it's definitely not air erosion.
Yeah, tributaries.
It's water erosion. So there has to have been water there at some time, just by the erosion. But now, can they prove it? Is something completely different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I always was kind of, you know, confused when I'd hear it two different ways all the time. Then I finally did see the picture a few years back, 2 years ago, about the polar ice caps on Mars, and you know, obviously, I guess that there's some reason to not want to just come out and say, hey, there's water on Mars right away, because they want to be able to make sure before people start saying
stuff.
Well,
and if they find out if, you know, like that switch or whatever caused that is something different than what occurs here, well, that's even more interesting.
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've always been kind of under the conspiracy theorist idea of not totally conspiracy, but the fact that, you know, that they'll only release things as they feel we're happy enough to hear it. You know, that we can take it now. We all have PDAs, so we can all figure out that it's okay to have, you know, water on Mars. You know what I mean? Or, you know, we're getting more tech now. You know, we're going to be maybe going out there. You know, so they're going to start telling us little details here slowly. You know, because obviously we're going to figure it out on our own, or people are getting access to big telescopes, or.
Well, then it's also easier You know, it's like...
they can't say they're doing all this NASA stuff and not producing any results. So we spent $1 billion and we found out there's water on Mars. You know, I'm sure they found out many other things. You know?
Or the other thing is that, you know, it's easier to boil a frog slowly than throwing him into a pot of water, you know, boiling water. Because you kind of just get him, you know, desensitized to the whole idea of that. Well, we actually did know that there's a whole, you know, colony and, you know, civilization underneath the surface of Mars. We've known that for 50 years, but you didn't.
Yeah, and now you do, and you're hating your home planet, and you feel like moving out. We've got great vacation packages, and they won't bother you, so come on down.
Right, or that, you know, that we've wasted, you know, trillions of dollars to look at another piece of dirt that revolves around the sun.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. All right, well, so a lot of information. Okay, well, this happened, I believe, on the 23rd of March. Someone had broken into www.gnome.org. And here is their letter talking about the discovery. Owen Taylor wrote, "We discovered evidence of an intrusion on the server hosting www.gnome.org, which is one of the window managers and software, you know, GUI software writers for, you know, most Linux distributions. And other GNOME.org websites. At the present time, we think this that the release GNOME sources and the GNOME source code repository was unaffected. We are investigating further and will provide updates as soon as we know more. We hope to have the essential services hosted on the affected machine up and running again as soon as possible. The quick status update on the situation, no additional damage has been discovered. At the current time, we are very cautious. Hopefully that the compromise was limited in scope. FTP.gnome.org is back on now that we have additional confidence in the integrity of the tarballs. We've now restored a number of services running on a replacement machine. Websites including gnome.org, developer.gnome.org are back up in limited service. Dynamic content is still off, so some parts may be inaccessible. Planet.gnome.org is available, again, providing all of your favorite blogs and gossip. Bugzilla is in testing mode. We hope to restore general access in the next day. Thanks for your patience. We'll continue to provide updates as we move back to fully operational status." So, yeah, last I looked, that GNOME 2.6 on its way out here, which actually should have already been released, they said was unaffected. So that's one of the main code bases that they host there that they would like to protect.
Well, that's really nice that, you know, that it seems that it's up and running and you know, secure again so quickly.
Yeah, and it's great that it, you know, they make announcements like that, like right away. It's, you know, it's very much a you know, reputation.
Yeah.
You know, and Linux is big about reputation, and it's, you know, it's very good to see that they say what's affected, what's going on, and stuff like that, because, hey, if someone gets screwed up, why don't they just put the blame where the blame really goes? The person is screwed up, and they try to do the best they could to fix it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
it's not like a, you know, a corporation, which, we did bad. We screwed up, and now no one's going to buy our product.
Because these peer-to-peer terrorists, you know, screwed up our money, and we weren't able to, you know, we couldn't fix it. You know, I don't know. All right, here's another interesting article. First person that was ever prosecuted for using a keylogger, keystroke logger. A California man who prosecutors say planted an electronic bugging device on a computer at an insurance company was indicted on Tuesday, which is in late March, of federal wiretapping charges in what prosecutors said was the first case of its kind. Larry Lee Ropp, a 46-year-old former insurance claims manager, is the first defendant charged with a federal crime for using a keystroke logger, which tracks activities on a computer and feeds the information back to its owner, a spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Los Angeles said. Prosecutors did not say that they believe Ropp hoped to gain what they believed Ropp hoped to gain by bugging the computer, which was being used by a secretary to executives at the company where he worked, Bristol West Insurance Group. But an affidavit filed with the indictment suggests he intended to supply information to attorneys representing a class of people who were suing the company. Very interesting.
Yeah. That's kind of strange that he's just being indicted. I would think that technology has been around for a while.
Yeah, they actually sold it at all the spy shops. It's a little device you can plug between the keyboard and the serial port and then take it later and take a look at it.
Wow.
So
$50. Yeah, that you can buy this technology, you know, at spy headquarters or wherever, and, well, you can get prosecuted for it.
Yeah. Well, I can see, you know, I wouldn't want a keylogger in my house, but I don't know. We'll, you know, see how that goes if I hear any more news on those things.
Well, actually, I wouldn't mind one in my own house because then I would know, you know, if somebody was using my computer without my knowledge.
Possibly. And you have that right to do that in your own home.
Exactly. So, I can see easily the justification of using that device.
On March 18th, Chancellor Gordon Brown, Chancellor is when we're talking about people in the UK, Gordon Brown gave his latest budget, which the newspaper said was the beginning of new Labour's re-election plans. However, what has only just come to light, hidden in one of the thousands of pages produced with the budget, is a plan to introduce a new tax on the sale of open-source software. The government logic appears to be that because the work on the project is done for free, it's missing out on income tax. Plus, commercial software companies are put in unfair competitive disadvantage. Poor guys.
Oh.
This is completely outrageous. The Chancellor threats to impose a windfall tax on the open source software is not only unfair, but will have a devastating effect on the cost of IT projects. Gordon Brown has become so close to the world's richest man, is basically talking about how Gordon Brown and Bill Gates seem to be buddies. So close to the richest man that it was him that put Bill Gates on the honors list to become a knight, because Bill Gates was knighted over there in the UK. So
God, they'll knight anybody anymore, won't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was ridiculous after that.
Like, he has honor, integrity, respect. Wow.
He just makes a lot of money for people and himself. So Gordon Brown, who was also against the EU's recent decision to fine Microsoft, he doesn't get on with competition commissioner. He doesn't get on with competition commissioners Mario Monti. See here, okay, it's only for just one of the argument. Okay, that's just kind of some side note. Basically, he was against the EU thing. He helped get Bill Gates knighted. He decided to not make millions, and so he helped balance his books. Okay, this is just more talk. But basically, it seems like he's buddies with Bill, and they want to put a flat tax, you know, on open source software. Now, that's just his paper. Okay, that's not what the government is doing, from what I'm reading. It's not something that's being considered totally. So, you know, but it's just interesting that somebody out there would want to do that. And I don't understand how.
From a money grubbing aspect, I can see why you want to do it.
Well, how can
you can't. How can you justify it?
How can you put a competitive company at a disadvantage by having open source software financially? I mean, are you saying that just because someone comes up with a better business, you need to finance the people that don't have a good enough business by charging the people that do have a better business?
Yeah, that's...
It's completely ridiculous.
It's called political plunder.
Yeah, it's political plunder. It's BS.
Which
and,
is piracy.
Yeah, and I don't believe that will ever come to light. And if it does, I'll be extremely pissed, and we'll be talking about it here. And
that's right.
I'm willing to start
a
rally.
We'll help the UK and the UKians.
Or anybody.
Rise up and take down the establishment.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Absolutely. Okay, well, this is an interesting read here. Netscape co-founders 12 reasons for the growth of open source software. And his 12 reasons are: the internet is powered by open source web servers and stuff like that. The internet.
It was powered by porn.
Well, that's the fuel. Once power.
No, I thought that's where it's trying to go.
Well, it's what serves the porn, though, is open source software.
Oh, okay. It's the median for the porn.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The internet is the carrier for open source. You know, because it's well, over the internet.
Yeah, it's the physical structure. Yeah, it's the what's actually going, linking all the physical
open.
Structure. Yeah.
The internet is also the platform through which open source is developed.
Well, yeah, because it makes it more efficient and much faster development and proliferation of it.
It's simply going to be more secure than proprietary software.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's everyone can make mistakes, but it's nicer when everyone can look at everyone else's mistakes and fix it in a friendly manner. So
it's not just one person's idea. It's the conglomeration of hundreds of people looking at and trying to solve the same problem.
Now, this one's kind of weird. Open source benefits from anti-American sentiments.
Ooh.
I guess it's saying, like, you know, if you're, you know, like, anti-big government, go make open source. I think that was kind of crap to put in there.
Or unless Microsoft is now, like, intrinsically tied
to America
in the world, like, view.
Yeah, and how about
capitalism?
Well, you can do capitalism on open source, but I mean, you know.
But it's more of a socialization. It's more of a social process. It's more like socialism as a process.
Yeah. I think what he's saying is that people that don't like Big Brother, all that crap, are benefiting. You know, they want to do open source. Incentives.
It's really not, you know, Americans, the anti-American sentiment. It's anti-power.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, spread it out amongst the people, the users. Incentives around open source include the respects of one's peers. Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. Because we talked about how open source, you know, Microsoft said, well, we can fire our employees, so that's why they code good. I know a lot of people that do really bad jobs and they're still not fired.
Oh, yeah.
But with
usually get promoted, actually.
Yeah, they do.
It's like, wow, you really suck at that job. Why don't we move you up and see if you do better at management?
Yeah, yeah. It's Bill Lumberg on Office Space. And then, open source means standing on the shoulders of giants.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because if you are privy to everything that has come before you, then whatever you do is going to be standing on top of that.
Yep. Servers have always been expensive and proprietary, but Linux runs on Intel. It's saying that you get the good hardware, but now it's cheaper and non-proprietary.
Okay.
I guess. Yeah, it's on a supported platform.
Yeah.
So that's why it can be big. Embedded devices are making greater use of open source. That's true. There are an increasing number of companies developing software that aren't software companies. Mm. Basically, I think maybe stuff that are like routers.
Yeah.
They sell networking equipment, but they need a little bit of software in there. But so they're not a typical software company.
Yeah.
But they're using open source software. I think that's what he's trying to say.
Well, that makes so much more sense because then they don't have to really invest that heavily.
Yeah.
Into developing that.
And then companies are increasingly supporting Linux and 12. It's free. There you go.
Right on.
So, all right.
Good stuff.
Good stuff. Okay, well, let's see, because we're getting down to... Well, I can finish this. Okay, well, Novell is actually doing something with NetWare that's a little different. While Novell remains completely committed to its flagship networking operating system, the product will cease to exist as a standalone product offering from the end of this year.
Hmm.
Novell owns SUSE Linux now, or SUSE, depending on who you talk to. SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 9 kernel will also be included in the Open Enterprise Server, which is their product that they sell, but will also be retained as a standalone SUSE Linux product, as will a rich collection of networking services, including Enterprise Linux services, which will be transparently interoperate between the two environments. Basically, it's like putting Novell NetWare tools on Linux.
Hmm.
So, if you don't know what Novell NetWare does, it's basically when Microsoft attempted to do server products, Novell came out and kicked its butt with way better features technology, and then eventually Microsoft came back. But so they're basically integrating their Novell NetWare features, tools, stuff like that, to run with Linux. So.
Well, that's going to give Microsoft a little bit more run for their money.
Yeah, yeah. Things like OpenOffice and other alternatives out there, Samba, stuff like that. Okay, well, this is kind of interesting. We've seen Game Boys do their web server. We've seen that. We've seen quite a few little gadgets out there. Now, with the newest version of OpenBSD 3.5, it now supports your Game Boy Advance. So you can basically run Unix on your Game Boy.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And it actually, it does support a lot of the, it supports the link on it for multiple players and stuff like that. So you can link other Game Boys up together. And I think that you can do some networking between the two Game Boys, or four Game Boys, actually. How do you
input? Because there's only, you can't really do like a full keyboard.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I didn't see any screenshots. Well, I saw a screenshot, but it was a shell that was spawned on a Game Boy. I don't know how they have the keyboard. They might have a button you press and a little keyboard comes up, and then you just move your thing. And
my God, would that be time consuming?
Yeah, it would suck. But hey,
it's cheaper than a Palm Pilot.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Supported peripherals. It supports the USB charger cable, the AC adapter, the Game Boy Advance floodlights, Game Boy SP game changer, four-player link cable, in-car adapter, multiplayer link cable, headphone, and adapter. So it covers all that, and so that was pretty neat. In OpenBSD, I know that NetBSD is the one that aims to be on every architecture possible, and I'm probably sure that probably works for NetBSD as well. Don't quote me, but very interesting nonetheless. All right, well, something that is new and changing, but it's out there. Basically, Opera is releasing its new version of new version of Opera embeds via voice from IBM. Basically, you can do voice commands to your browser and interact that way. Today, and this is March 23rd, at AVO SpeakTech 2004, Opera Software announced the upcoming release of its multimodal desktop browser that incorporates IBM's embedded via voice speech technology. By leveraging IBM's voice libraries in this version of Opera, users can navigate, request information, and even fill out web forms using speech and other forms of input in the same interaction. This new form of allowing us to interact with the content on the web is in a more natural way, combining speech with other forms of input and output, first on PCs and in the near future devices such as cell phones and PDAs.
Well, see, now that is a beautiful thing. You imagine having a voice-controlled PDA. That would be the ultimate. I would be completely happy with just using that.
But you may not want anyone to hear you when you're saying, take me to www.bigmamas.com.
That's when you set up code words for it, too.
Yeah, yeah. Interestingchickens.com or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's just that easy.
All right.
Or you use words that sound like it. Like, how often are you going to... You can switch the meaning of, like, xylophone to Big Mamas.
Yeah. We get it all of our own internet foreign code. Check it out on slipnet.org. When it's available.
That's right. Coming sometime, not too soon.
Yeah. Coming in the year possibility of the future. Moving along, we have a lot of information, so I'm just spitting it out as it comes. The Open Source Vulnerability Database, the OSVDB, aims to plug what it sees a gap in the information security market. There are several vulnerability databases, but some are run by private companies, while others contain a limited subset of vulnerabilities or have significant restrictions on their content. None of the simultaneous, comprehensive, open for free use, and answerable to the community, OSVB argues. To meet its objectives, the OSVB project must concentrate on establishing a core group of project organizers on creating the technical infrastructure to collect and validate vulnerable data, and on building a team of contributors to create open-source vulnerability records. All that took almost 2 years, but now the database has been open to the public. The main goal of it is to be complete without bias. So, that's awesome. I mean, what they're going to do is just make it so there's better tracking. I think it also helps with awareness, things that other IT professionals or people that like to secure their systems can monitor that to see what they need to look into their own systems to make sure things are secure and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Very cool. All right. Oh, you know, let's see. Let me see here if it tells me. I checked out the link for their website, and I don't have my browser up here. I would just do a Google on OSVDB and check it out. I've checked it out. Pretty cool site, lots of information, and it's kind of new, but it's going to grow for sure. All right. Well, there is a new technology out there that Microsoft will be using to copy protect software, music, or whatever. This, in this case, is talking about the music. Sources say the technology codenamed Janison, originally expected more than a year ago, was recently released in a test version to developers, and that a final release is now expected as soon as July. Janus would add a hacker-resistant clock to portable music players for files encoded with Microsoft's proprietary Windows Media Audio format that in turn would help let subscription services such as Napster put rented tracks on portable devices, something that's not currently allowed. Fans of portable players could then pay as little as $10 a month for ongoing access to hundreds of thousands of songs instead of buying a song, downloads one at a time for about $1 a piece. So instead of it, you can just rent it.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Swap the songs, and I think it might be a better idea than
That comes back
depends
to
on the limitations, but
that comes back to like what we were talking about before about just buying like a share license, where you're just renting your privilege of using that for a period of time.
Yeah, the benefit I see to that for file people is I think it make people that are in collecting MP3s and getting their music via that method. Is that they'd really enjoy the fact that once they get bored of a song, they can swap songs in and out, you know?
Exactly. So you can just write that off as a constant expense, and you can, it's just like the library. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So I think that would be a good thing. It depends on how portable they make it, stuff like that. Limitations, how many songs you can have at once, maybe a small amount, and you might be inconvenienced because you don't want to swap out songs. You may have 15 songs you want to listen to right now.
But then at the same time, with the smaller amount of songs that you can do, what's really neat about is if you allow people to have huge libraries that they're renting, a lot of really obscure songs that not are really popular, but maybe like socially significant to the development of music, like historically, will be lost from the internet.
Yeah.
Except if somebody's just going, I'm renting these really specific ones. And
forever.
Yeah, and that's going to be...
Not going to happen.
Yeah, no.
That's always the problem with the internet and all this data that's being produced, because who's saving it all? The Department of Justice basically has criticized the EU's ruling on Microsoft, which the ruling was either separate Windows Media Player from Microsoft's Windows operating system or, pay a huge fine of a few hundred million dollars. Assistant Attorney General Whit Pat in a statement also said that in a record $613 million fine levied on Microsoft by the European Commission is unfortunate. It surpasses fine the Commission has imposed on prefixing cartels, and that may send a wrong message about antitrust enforcement priorities. The U.S. government fought its own antitrust battle with Microsoft in a case that was filed in 1998 and settled in 2002. Although the government proposed a breakup of Microsoft, it never proposed that Microsoft remove any part of Windows, and for a reason. Pi said, well, they already defeated Netscape. I mean, it doesn't matter. That was my own little addition. The U.S. settlement with Microsoft provides clear and effective protection for competitive and consumers by preventing misconduct by Microsoft that would inhibit competition in the area of middleware applications, such as a web browser and media player. Right. The U.S. The U.S. continues to be active in enforcement of the Microsoft's compliance with that settlement, and this work has resulted in substantial changes to Microsoft's business practices, according to Pate. I don't really know what that settlement did, because I'm sure it's going to affect more back-end business people, but, we still heard since 2002 that there has still been a bit of trouble. And most of the time, actually, people have just kind of given up and started developing open source. So I don't know if it's gotten any better. I can't really say. I know that, it seems like you know, they're trying to give tell the EU that, hey, you went a little too far. I don't really know what to say. And the fact, now here's something to think about. The fact that there are alternatives out there and they are developing into real viable commercial use and products on a wide range of applications and things, that don't just say that since that's available, it's okay for Microsoft to do whatever, because it's not okay for anybody to do monopolistic type of businesses. I know that obviously in business you want to take out your competitors, and I don't know. I have a little bit of understanding of having an understanding of why people do that. It just depends on how far it goes and if it's really hurting the people and the consumers and other businesses enough to where it's just not a good practice. So even if open source people use open source in a possible way that was abusive to others in a legitimate way, you know, then obviously that wouldn't be as good as well. So just don't take the fact that that there is alternatives that to just let everything else go and say, hey, do whatever you want, because it's still not helping out the situation. All right, just about getting ready to wrap up the show. Few last bits of information. Basically, what's his name here? Raphael Gray may style himself the white-hatted saint of e-commerce, but he's got a lot of explaining to do after he and another 18-year-old friend were arrested for holding the credit card account number of Microsoft's Bill Gates, the richest man in the world. Gray, 18, and a friend hacked into 9 e-commerce sites and stole credit card information related to 26,000 people in the United States, Canada, Thailand, Japan, and Britain. Gates' information was emailed to NBCI, a subsidiary of the National Banking Broadcasting Company. They were caught by a joint investigation of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Welsh Police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and Internet Security consultants. Significant assistance was provided by the International Banking and Credit Card
Industry. Let's think about that image right there. There was regular police, Mounted Police,
Welsh Police.
And then there
Taco
was
Bell janitor.
No, and then there was computer consultant. So you get all these uniforms, and then the geek uniform.
Yeah, the one that figured it out.
Yeah, that was just absolutely beautiful. I could just see them all like lining up, and
they were caught by investigation of George Bush, Al Gore, just kidding. All right, the total loss attributed to Gray's online pranks could exceed $3 million, according to the FBI. So.
Oops.
Bill Gates spent a lunch. No, just kidding. lunch for you, Ray. Okay. Also, Sun Microsystems and Microsoft have stopped suing each other for about 10 years, in a settlement which will see Sun trouser almost $2 billion. The bitter rival, it's amazing what Microsoft has been putting out lately in bills here. The bitter rivals have signed a technology collaboration pact to get their products to work better together. And they have settled all outstanding litigation. They have also come to terms on patents and other issues. Microsoft has paid $700 million to Sun to settle antitrust suits, antitrust issues, and $900 million to resolve patent issues. It is also making an upfront payment of $350 million to Sun to cover payment patent royalties for server products. Sun and Microsoft will pay royalties from here on in for use of each other's technology. Oh, and Microsoft will be nice to Java in the future.
Well, that's a nice thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. And, hey, we can say that parts of the system out there are working.
Yeah, that's one of the nicest things I've ever seen Microsoft do.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they did it.
Too willingly.
Too willingly.
They were probably going to lose the whole bit.
Yeah, 10 years of willingness, to build the willingness. All right, here's our last story here. Kind of an interesting one to wrap up the, end off with the SCO like we usually do, because we don't want you to tune out real early in the program. let's see. In an amended counterclaim to SCO's lawsuit that it filed Friday back in March, IBM asked a district court for the District of Utah to enter a declaratory judgment in its favor. IBM asked the court to rule that it is not infringing on SCO's copyright and has not breached in its contractual obligations to SCO. The filing further asked for the court to rule that SCO, which was at one time a Linux vendor, cannot impose restrictions on the software that it previously distributed under the license Linux open source software license. By seeking a declaratory judgment, which a judge could issue as soon as the discovery process is over and before the case goes to trial, IBM appears to be indicating that it has conducted an internal analysis of SCO's claims and has found them to be without merit. So Jeff Norman, an intellectual property partner with the Chicago law firm Kirkland Ellis LLP. It just means that they didn't find any smoking gun. If they had found something really bad, they probably would have gone to SCO and talked settlement, Norman said. Because IBM's filing seeks the broad judgment that IBM has not infringed on any valid or enforceable copyright owned by SCO, a declaratory judgment in its favor would prevent SCO from bringing up new copyright claims later in the trial and would have a devastating impact on the SCO's case. So if that means things are getting closer to wrapping up, probably not. Well, probably yes. Is it going to wrap up anytime soon? Probably not. But that is the news on the SCO front. And hope that nasty whatever it is gets handled quickly. As quickly as possible. So, that's all I got.
Yeah. Well, my only thing I was thinking about that was an article ago about, you know, monopolies and all that, is it's really been kind of disconcerting for me about how the Federal Trade Commission is letting all these companies, you know, especially like oil companies, and, you know, keep merging. You know, are they just wanting to have, like, you know, complete monopoly over all systems? Just kind of...
Who have complete monopoly?
Oh, like, essentially, you know, like how, well, the ones that come to mind have been less, all the major, like, oil companies have been merging together. Like, 76 and Conoco and ExxonMobil. You know, there's really going on, in a few years, they'll probably merge as well. And so we're going to have essentially come down to be like one major provider of oil and then some independents. And so it's, and then those are going to be swallowed up by the major corporation. And we're going to have essentially, you know, one oil provider. And then what good is that going to do?
Yeah, that's,
that means we're going to be paying like $5 a liter for gas.
Like they do over in Europe?
Yeah.
yeah, you know, that's...
So I think they're really slacking. I think they need to have an infusion of some fresh blood. You know, actually start to get on a tirade.
Well, there was a petition to OPEC where a few states signed that they were kind of upset with what's going on. Arizona wasn't on that.
I wonder why.
Because Janet Napolitano doesn't do crap for this state.
That's right. Except for, you know, put actually more stress on our welfare system and child support system by, you know, like if you even like look at a kid wrong, that's child abuse, and they're gonna go off to the, you know, to a
slammer.
No, to like a shelter. Oh, I forget the word right here.
All right,
foster home.
Oh.
Because since, you know, she, like, declared the war on child abuse, they're actually abusing children by putting them in, you know, like, mass foster homes. Because there's actually been more children put into them.
VR, you've been really thinking about this.
No, actually, I just
read... Right at the end of the show.
I actually just read an article the other day about this.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't take too long to get me on a rant.
Rant. All right. Well, all right, I think we're going to end the show here. Go ahead and check out slipknot.org. Go to the forums, do some posting, post articles for me to read in the show. Tell us about what you thought about something. We'll continue the conversation going there and in subsequent shows. And there you go. I think that's it for this edition of In the Know.
Sounds good.
All right, well, we'll see everyone in 2 weeks.
Later. Yeah.
fear is never ending. Controlling, I can't seem to find myself again. My walls are closing in.
Not understand the confidence. I'm convinced that it's just too much pressure to take.
I've felt this way before. So insecure. My own reflection. It's hard.